This is the passion that came to my life when I got converted. I said, I live in a country, Lord, which is basically a poor country. India's basically very poor. 98% non-Christian. And the 2% Christian, 1% is Catholic, which is very often, most of it is non-Christian. In a country like this, with a tremendous amount of corruption and poverty, can we prove that those who seek God's kingdom first and His righteousness will find everything added to them in their earthly life? They may not become millionaires. There's no need to be a millionaire to live on this earth. But they'll have enough for themselves and their children, not just financially and materially in an earthly way, but that their children will also grow up in the fear of God and recognize that if you put God first, everything will be taken care of. I have four sons. They're all following the Lord today. They married God-fearing wives, and they've got children whom they're seeking to bring up in God's ways. But when our children were small, my desire was not to make them highly educated and very wealthy. I wanted to give them an education for one reason, that they will not become beggars or parasites on others. They must earn their own living, and it's good to give them a good education so they earn their own living. But I said, if I don't teach them to seek God's kingdom first, I've not given them a good inheritance. I want to teach them to seek God's kingdom first in their life, from childhood. That God is first in everything. That you don't tell lies. You never fight with people who fight with you. You forgive them. You care for the weak and the despised in your school. I used to tell them, when you go to school, think of how Jesus went to school. If Jesus went to school, who do you think He made friends with? Do you think He made friends with all the rich, classy children in His class? Or do you think He'd look around for the weak ones and those who were despised by others? Maybe that lame boy or the boy who's got a stutter or a stammer. Don't you think Jesus would make friends with that person? I said, you go and do the same thing. You be friends with some people. If you're good at math, go and help another kid who's not good at math. That's what Jesus would have done. That's your way of seeking God's kingdom first at your level in school. Follow Jesus there. You don't have to wait till you're 30 years old to follow Jesus. You can follow Jesus when you're 10 years old. Because I say, Lord, I want my children from earliest age to seek God's kingdom first. That's the greatest inheritance I can give them as they grow up. Otherwise, I can give them all the food and clothing and education and cars when they're 18 years old and they can go astray. And that's what's happening to a lot of Christians. You go to most Christians today and say, how is it going with your children? They're all astray, gone astray. Well, I'll tell you why. You didn't teach them to seek God's kingdom from the time they were 3 years old. You didn't teach them to obey their parents. So it's very, very important. Now, we can't do anything about the past, and I'm not saying this to condemn anybody. But I want you to pray that God will forgive you for not teaching your children to seek God's kingdom first. And I tell you, it's more and more difficult in a very wealthy society where all the symbols of wealth are around us and all the other so-called Christians. And we say, oh, I don't want my children to miss out on that. What are they missing out on? If they miss out on the kingdom of God, they miss out on the main thing. So it's very, very important that we don't set our mind on our interests. You put God's interests first, and I tell you from 57 years of my experience, He will never let you down. Your family will not suffer if you put God's interest first. It is impossible. I've seen that in the poorest families in the villages of India, where they put God first and it's gone well with them and their families. Maybe they don't earn as much as you, but it's gone well with them. And you'll see in eternity, when Christ comes, you'll see many of them are far ahead of you. Because they put God first. I've never believed, for example, in tithing. It's an Old Testament law. Give 10% to God, 90% is yours. Where did Jesus teach that? Where did Jesus teach that once you give 10% to God, your responsibility is over? No. What would you think of a wife who says 10% of my life is yours to her husband? 90% is mine or somebody else's. That's not going to be a good marriage. And that's exactly the reason why many Christians don't have a satisfactory experience with Christ. If you give yourself to God, I don't mean that giving 100% to God, you put all your money in the offering box or empty out your bank account. That's not the meaning. That's a misunderstanding. What it means is that everything I am and that I have, I recognize as belonging to God. My life, my time, my energy, my money, it basically belongs to God, and I want to use it all in a way that will glorify Him. And God may allow you to use that money to build a house for yourself, a comfortable house, or buy a car, or two cars, whatever it is, there's nothing wrong. But you don't ever think it is mine. Lord, it's yours. I want to live on this earth as a steward, using things, but the house may be on my name, but it's not mine, it's God's. That attitude towards everything in my life, my ambitions, my plans. I'll make a mess of my life if I make my own plans. What does it mean to put God's interest first? Now, this is all connected to building the church. I'm not talking about going to heaven. I'm talking about building the church before we go to heaven. Noah was not just interested in going to heaven. He wanted to build the ark. He wanted to do something what God wanted him to do. And if you're a serious Christian, you'll want to build a church before you leave this earth. You may not be a great preacher or a prophet or anything, doesn't matter, but you can do something. And the way to do it is, remember what the Lord told Peter, you are setting your mind on your own interests. And if you're like that, you are the voice of Satan and you're a stumbling block. See what it says here. Look at the whole verse in its context, Matthew 16:23. Get behind me, Satan. And what is the voice of Satan? You are setting your mind on your own interests and not God's. Now, there are very few Christians who realize that when they set their mind on their own interests, they are actually cooperating with Satan, hindering the work of the church. I realize that very early, and I'm very thankful. And I hope you will realize it at least now. And I tell you this, believe me, God will not make you lose out. Impossible. Many people think God is a spoiled sport. He takes away everything that's... If I surrender to God completely, He'll make my life a mess. And completely the opposite. Are you willing to choose everything that God chooses for you? If you have a choice between two openings for a job, would you say, Lord, show me the one you want for me? Or do you get the feeling God will tell you, take the one with the lower salary? Because God's a spoiled sport. Are you willing to let God choose for you whom you should marry? Yes, God will tell you to go and marry that ugly girl. You got a wrong idea of God. Completely wrong idea of God. He's a loving father. He's a better father than the best father on the earth. But He wants what's good for you. He wants what's good for you in the long run. And he may see dangers along that way of the job with the larger salary, on dangers marrying that very pretty girl who's got a very stubborn nature. And He may save you from that. That's another thing. And we are foolish. It's wonderful to put God as the one in charge of my life. Say, Lord, I want your plan for my life in every area. Whom I marry, what job I take, where I live. Please direct me according to your plan. And God says, I'll do that. Will you put my interest first in your life? I was tremendously challenged once by the words of Jesus at the end of His life. Jesus is our example. We all say we want to follow Him. Here's one area where we can follow Him. You want to hear it? John 17:10. This is the opposite of what we read just now in Matthew 16. You set your mind on your own interests. Here's the opposite of that, the way Jesus lived on earth. In John 17, at the end of His life, when He had finished His course, He said to His Father in verse 4, I have accomplished all that You wanted Me to do on this earth, and I have glorified You. And here's this beautiful expression, Father, John 17:10. Remember this verse all your life. All that is Mine is Yours. This is not the minimum Christian. This is the maximum Christian. All that is Mine is Yours. And as a result, all that is Yours is Mine. The one who says, Lord, 10% of Mine is Yours, God will say to him, well, 10% of Mine is Yours. You realize why you're so poor spiritually? You realize why you're so defeated in your life by sin after sin after sin? you realize why you cannot obey a simple command like rejoice in the Lord always, 24/7. You know, for years and years and years and years in my life as a born-again Christian, I could not obey that command. I would rejoice sometimes or most of the time, but always? Is there such a verse in the Bible? Do you think the Bible has suggestions or commandments? There's no suggestion in the Bible. Everything's a commandment, and I could not keep it. But the sad thing was, even though I couldn't keep it for many years as a born-again Christian, it didn't bother me. Because I never found anybody else around me who was rejoicing always. I said, well, I suppose it just means, well, try and do it, or most of the time. Or think of another, that's Philippians 4:4. There's another verse in Philippians 2:14 which says, do everything without murmuring and complaining. Can you honestly say that that's how you do everything in your life? Everything. Without murmuring or complaining about anything. Whether things go wrong or things go right, I will not murmur or complain. I believe in a sovereign God who controls everything. It's a wonderful way to live. I tell you, just few commands like this. In everything give thanks. 1 Thessalonians 5:17 and 18. Rejoice always. Do all things without murmuring or complaining. With just these two or three commands, your home can be a heaven on this earth. Why is it the devil doesn't want us there? He keeps telling us it's not possible, it's not possible, it's not possible. It's not possible because you don't say to God, everything that's mine is yours. If you said to God, Lord, everything that's mine is yours, God will say, everything that's mine is yours too.